Greetings, my fellow Freedom Love Sovereign Thinkers. Thank you for tuning to LL3 Podcast. My name is Craig, transmitting from the beautiful realms upon Earth. Today's date is Sunday, March 3rd, 2024. This is episode 1718, Free Speech on Trial and CIA Orchestrated Haiti's 2004 Coup. Before I proceed, you can find me on multiple social media sites and podcast channels. Just type in Looky Luck number 3, Looky Luck Roman number 3, with your three eyes, or the Looky Luck Roman number 3 podcast. If you have any information, comments, criticisms, recommendations, etc., whatever you do, please use decorum. You can send an email to ll3.podcast@proton.me. If you want to donate, go to paypal.me or cash.app/LookyLuckNumber3. Well. Oh, leap year passed, or leap day. Very exciting as usual. Yeah, I was watching a little couple of video clips. Looks like direct energy weapons occurred in Texas, trying to destroy the cattle industry. And you can tell because some areas are so burnt and other spots are like very clean, you can say. Well, that's what happens when you have the war on terror, which has always been against his people. You're with us, so you're with the terrorist. So it's like doublespeak, projection, right? Oh, man. And of course, I was like listening to Merrick Garland. Yeah, I'm a cowardly wuss with the attorney general. Let's bring my buck cheeks to the tyrants. A man I'll never be. All this ordeals happening around these United States. He's worried about election integrity. Oh, stop all voter ID election integrity. Big middle finger to that hack. Coward. He has never been a man in my book. Shoot. Now, I know for sure. It's like there's been talk about NATO, United States sending troops on the ground in Ukraine. Of course, there was a Putin said if you do that, it'll be starting nuking. It'll be hitting mostly military bases and all that good stuff. You don't want to wipe anyone off the map. Because they would have done that a long time with Ukraine in general. With that sleaze bag, Vladimir Zelensky. And I'm not really loving with Putin or anyone other governmental figureheads, I would say, with all due respect. However, you got to always look at the historical elements, too. And the hegemony of factions. That's why I tell people, just read The Grand Chessboard by Zbigniew Brzezinski. It gives you a clue what's been happening over there. Trying to fulfill his legacy, right? All right, well, I'm going to be browsing around here. Uncensored.news. Church of England seeks anti-racism offer to deconstruct whiteness as human events. So, no, I apologize for being a Caucasian, a white person, please. I've done nothing wrong. I'm sorry for what everyone has done in the past. You know, I'm not related to them. Ethno guilt trip. Come on, status. Feed me some of that recycled pus. You know, so there's all that ethno witch hunting's been going on for millenniums. Get the picture, folks. Nothing new, especially all you paper tiger activist. Yeah, you're right. Yeah. You know, just with a little fist in the air and so forth, which is irrelevant to the serious salute, status rhetoric. So, very interesting there. And of course, technocracy news and trends. Juicy, Elon Musk sues Sam Altman for breach of contract. Interesting there. And let's go further up here. Oh, big league politics. Establishment Republican Lynn Stuckey is no longer fit to represent Texas, HD 64. That's the House District. And of course, American greatness. Trump's faint-hearted SCOTUS picks could doom him in D.C. election case. It is possible, but still give him the bird. Remember, all they are is just an opinion. All right? And these United States, you have the non-commandeering doctrine or any commandeering doctrine, which is also relates to federalism, not nationalism. is a form of centralization, okay, which Abe Lincoln loved to want to do things his way. So always when you hear someone say this person's the best president since Abraham Lincoln, you tell him sacrilege, blasphemy, watch that tongue. I have to let Roger Stone know that too, out of love, okay? I'm not mad, but I'm like, what are you doing? It just drives me crazy. I'm sorry. I just get a little bit, I don't get too angry, but I'm like, you know, what are you doing? All right, well, RT, it's time for a cognitive test for U.S. presidential candidates. And NTD, Key Northern California Highway closed as snow continues to fall and blizzard hit Sierra Nevada. Hopeful folks out there are doing well, please. And let me see here. Post-millennial, Oregon recriminalizes possession of hard drugs after disastrous impact of decriminalization. You know, the problem is with that, it should have been more regulated. Okay, not just do a free-for-all. Like, I think the drug war is a sham. And I can say that out of respect, especially with marijuana and all that and cocaine. The whole thing is, it always, certain things should be more, like, conditioned, regulated, and so forth. It's like alcoholic beverages. In that same bracket. I'm not saying fentanyl is a safe, fentanyl should be decriminalized. No, that's totally different. Okay, that's poison. So that's going attempting murder. So that's how I see it. So here's who the IRS is targeting this tax season, right? La 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 la. Let's check it out. All right, it says here, bolstered by $60 billion cash infusion, Internal Revenue Service has ramped up its enforcement activities in order to boost tax revenues, with the tax agency focusing its compliance efforts on several categories of taxpayers. They call it the sea change. Yeah, the sea change. And according to IRS estimates, taxpayers in America pay around 85% of the total taxes they owe. Okay, so there's a tax gap. More bureaucracy, polarization of high income taxes. IRS said it would patronize its enforcement actions on taxpayers with total positive income above $1 million and who have over $25,000 in recognized tax debt. High income cases. Yeah, tax the rich. Yeah. We heard that before. Yeah, Herbert, I think it was Herbert Hoover tried that or. Someone tried that during the 30s, taxed the rich, and the depression got a lot more greater. Studying a little history, folks, before jumping on the bandwagon. They want all you ignorant people to say, yeah, you know, be a conformist. All right, well, I'm digressing here. I'm just going to end that angle. But, yeah, so let's see here. Just news, Iowa's Kaplan Clark becomes all-time NCAA score leader, breaking a half-a-century-old record. Okay. Of course, herb.news, natural ways to manage aches and pains. Try to get rid of all those heavy drugs out there, folks. Yeah. Law enforcement today, yes, we have a massive threat here in America. U.S. faces 7,300% surge in Venezuelan migration. Point of information. It's not migration. They're illegal aliens. All I do is read the tax laws. There's no, you're not going to find migrants in here, okay? You can't call them illegal aliens because it may offend people. Boo hoo. And you know what? I don't care if they're from Venezuela or they're from Hungary, for goodness sakes. If they're all wider than me with the same last name, you should always go through the book. In uniform, parody, not just pick and select. That's been going on for many, many years. So, and hey, if people get offended, shoot, don't give a damn. Survival.news, large cities look like Los Angeles and New York suffer as homelessness and illegal immigration crisis collide. And right down here, Information Liberation, right-wing British activist Sam Malaya sentenced to 2 years in prison over anti-immigration sticker. So when it comes to common law and speech, free speech in the UK, if you hurt someone's feelings, you can go to prison. Yay! Yeah, we're a bunch of wankers. Let's have our tea. That's to the douchebags, the imbeciles, the tyrants. People in England, Britain should just give them the big middle finger and shoot fertilizer in their parliaments and courthouses. All right, I'm gonna go up around here. Daily Mail, COVID propaganda roundup, the Granny Holocaust Chronicles, and Alt-Market, discrimination is good, without it, civilization would collapse. End of the American Dream, the record-breaking natural disasters that we are witnessing in Texas and California right now are truly historic. Pipeline of criminals into the United States. All news pipeline, AI program claims to be God. I'll just browse around. Breitbart, exclusive, Colonel Kemp, Arab states want Hamas, Hezbollah destroyed. We all know that Hamas, it was created by Mossad. So, oh, you're anti-Semite. How offensive, right? Zero Hedge has one here. Crazy Cartarian, the cell case in tech, and the Ministry of AI Truth. That's interesting there. They're pretty good, Zero Hedge, and they get information from other places. So always check these folks out. And I'm going to be browsing right through here. Oh, look at this. Your news, conspiracy overthrows the United States. Trump blasts Biden's immigration policies. Remember, he's a Bushite and the Club of Rome stooge, Joe Biden. He does wake up in the morning and sing God Bless the Patriot to enhance his masculinity. All right, well, let's see. SHTFplan.com. Germany confirms leaked audio of its top general discussing blowing up the Crimean Bridge. Ooh, that's an act of war, of course. And we see news target. At least 1/4 of Gazans are facing famine as food scarcity is weaponized against the innocent. And Mayor Eric Adams rebukes New York City sanctuary city status because it prevents him from deporting criminal illegal immigrants. So the expose, soon there'll be no farms as part of their terrifying plan. They want everything factory farmed, right? Blacklisted news. No, never mind about that. That's a while back. Let me see. Badge gunfire as officers stopped the shooter at Joel Osteen's mega church. I saw a video of that too, and some of those officers were cowardly, hit the corner, hid. Here's the thing, folks. Even in Texas, legally, the police aren't obligated to protect an individual. And what gets me the most, because one of my Facebook pen pals, I call him, Charles Van Wick, was considered the hero of the horrific event that happened at his church in Cape Town called St. James Church Massacre. It was a mixed church. And a handful of people passed and many of them injured, but like, with a few minutes, he stopped it with a 38 Sten revolver. And of course, many of them forgave the assailants. However, turned themselves in. They didn't want them to turn themselves in. And that's interesting because even when they talk about the scriptures, it doesn't matter if you're a Christian or not, you can forgive. But still, there's a good amount of circumstances you have to pay the price or be penalized for it. Now, King happened with King David when he had a lust for Bathsheba and sent her husband to a battle that he knows he'll die. And things occurred, fornicating all that, or had an affair. And of course, Nathan found out about, called him on it, prayed to the Lord, and he still said he was forgiven, but he still had to be penalized. So he suffered a lot. Doesn't matter what your views are, but it's very interesting on that. When they talk about forgiveness, it's not like, oh, okay, we'll just let them go. No, you gotta be penalized for it. So I always give Charles Van Wick props. And even the survivors now had the courage to talk about it, which is beautiful. This is why it gets me when I see these churches, you know, even talk about these things and what's going on. And they have, and they believe the police are obligated to protect. Hey, churches are their property rights. And far as I'm concerned, these laws, if they have these laws, you know, no firearms allowed in churches or religious congregate or religious facilities. Give them the big middle finger because they're violating your basic rights, your natural rights on property control the property. So that's how I look at it. And another thing too, get out of that 501c3 garbage. Because if you represent a church and you're trying to preach the gospel, and you're being represented by a 501c3 organization, you're void without force. And I say that in good faith. That's to anyone. So, but Epoch Times here, Quebec spending saw highest level on record at over $15,000 per person in 2021 study. Interesting there. Okay, well, what can we say? Just very intriguing times, all right, as usual. I know I don't want to beat a dead horse or anything like that, but hopefully everyone's having a good time. It's March. Time is flying in 2024. Please to pay attention, be focused, and try not to worry about the material things or the pettiness. Because I know a lot of folks out there, due to the fiat currency and compacting in these cities. I know like a lot of people moving to Florida and they're going the same. They're living the same thing like you do in New York City. Come on, folks. Get a bigger picture. These are considered death traps, in my opinion, in my humble opinion, because, hey, I can see people grow their own food. If you could do it on the roof, that'd be awesome, because there's a thing called urban farming. I encourage that. Even I got to do my part, so I'm not saying I'm an expert. I'm not. But try to be more community-orientated. You know, plant the seed, not no tree. And of course, we always hear it in the whole political realm, because election year and so forth. And, of course, you got the factions beakering at one another. I did listen to Trump's speech in Richmond, Virginia. Yeah, look, he's entertaining. I remember the time when I was working an event. It was an entrepreneurs convention. I worked it. He was the last speaker. And he was fun. That doesn't mean I'm going to kiss his ring or anything like that. So, but observe responsibly. All right, never leave all your security eggs in one basket, all that good stuff. And decentralized money, too, because the Federal Reserve may crash. And, of course, beware of the synthetic movements. Oh, it's capitalism! They tried that in the Depression, and actually the Federal Reserve was responsible for it, according to my research. All right, well, I'll be talking on my first segment. Stay tuned. All right, first thing I'll be narrating here will be two articles, believe it or not. And it's about free speech on trial. This from the Daily Reckoning, came out on the 1st by Jeffrey Tucker. Free speech on trial. So, as it reads here, in a lifetime of observing policy controversies and court cases, I never witnessed anything as crucial to the future of the idea of freedom itself compare with what will transpire on March 18, 2024. On that day, the Supreme Court will hear arguments in Murphy versus Missouri concerning whether the government can force or nudge private companies to censor users on behalf of regime priorities. The evidence that they have been doing so is overwhelming. That's why the Fifth Circuit Court issued a Murphy injunction to stop the practice on grounds that is inconsistent with the First Amendment U.S. Constitution. The censorship industrial complex is working right now and hourly to delete free speech in America. That injunction was stayed pending a review by the highest court. The case itself hasn't even gone to court. This decision is only about the injunction itself, which was issued based on the alarming results of discovery alone. Essentially, the lower court is screaming, this must stop. The Supreme Court is trying to assess whether violations of liberty are extreme enough to justify a pretrial intervention now. The stakes. A positive ruling for the plaintiffs doesn't solve every problem, but at least it will mean that freedom stands a chance in this country. A ruling for the defense, which is essentially the government itself, will give license to every federal agency, including those that operate in the secret, like the FBI and CIA, to threaten every social media and media company in this country to delete any and all content that runs contrary to the approved narrative. There will be celebration in Washington if this happens. On the other hand, there will be tears if the court decides for the defense. It could be that the court will take an in-between position, refusing to let the injunction go ahead and promising some possible decision at a later date pending trial. That would be a disaster because it could mean 3 or 4 more years of full censorship pending an appeal of whether the outcome of the trial is. Free speech is everything. If we don't have that, we have nothing, and freedom is toast. All other problems pale in comparison. There are plenty of them, from healthcare to immigration, but we don't have free speech. We cannot get the truth out about any of them. Censorship industrial complex is wholly dedicated to making sure that we have no debates at all and that dissident voices are not even heard. Social media censors. As it is, Google, Microsoft, and Facebook, and many more besides, already heavily restrict speech. They work in cooperation with government and those tasked by government to the elite bidding. We know this for a fact. When Elon Musk took over Twitter, he discovered a vast censorship machine operating on behalf of the FBI and other agencies. Millions of posts were taken down along with users. He has done his best to rip out the guts of this board. Doing so entirely changed the character of the site. It became useful again. Not even the scale of the problem is widely understood. Usually people said that free speech is necessary to protect minority opinions. And in this case, the numbers don't matter to the censors. You could have 90% of users trying to advance an idea and still have it censored. This is what the old Twitter did. It was daily and hourly attacking the company's user base. This was their job, no matter how much it contradicts the whole point of social media. This could pertain to EVs, gender transitions, lockdowns, immigration, or anything else. Even now, the Google artificial intelligence engine extols the glories of lockdowns, masking, and mass injections while completely ignoring the contrary science. This is how they want things to be. Google's search engine is no better. It might as well be a federal agency. The justice here in the case will be in an awkward position. My guess is that none of them even knows that it's going on to extend it is. They will likely be shocked when they look at the evidence, providing that there is a $1 trillion industry in full operation that has massively distorted the public mind. Sorry about that, my dog. Every federal agency is involved, deeply embedded in the operations of all media companies and digital technology, which in turn requires universal surveillance and prosecution of contrary voices. The public has woke up. Until just a few years ago, this entire industry, which involves federal agencies, universities, nonprofits, shadow companies, bogus fact checks, and every manner of spook-operated front companies, was not known to exist. Now that we know, we are shocked by the extent of it. It has invaded the whole of our lives to the point that we cannot tell the real news from which is fed to us by intelligence agencies. Even worse, we've come to expect that most of what passes for approved opinion is flat out false. The justices will discover this truth. They will likely be astonished, but they will also be taken aback by how integral to our lives it has become. As it turns out, the federal government for nearly a decade has placed a very high priority on creating the public mind line at every turn for its own benefit and that of its industrial partners. Everyone in the old Soviet Union knew for sure that Pravda spoke for the Communist Party. But do people understand that their Google search results and Facebook timelines are no better? It's not clear whether and to what extent people do understand, but it is our reality. Will justice really be willing to pull the plug on the entire machinery? Doing that would be more disruptive of an established interest group than anything the court has done in many years or even ever. It would fundamentally change the way our technologies work. It would be devastating to federal agencies policing, or policing such a new system called free speech would be another matter entirely. It would mean that thousands of people would suddenly have nothing to do. That would be wonderful, but would it happen? Censorship, a global industry. As I say, censorship is now an entire global industry. It involves the world's most powerful foundations, governments, universities, and influencers. It seems like everyone wants a part in crushing what they called disinformation, misinformation, or malinformation, which is true information that they don't want out. We're surrounded by this machinery of control, and yet most people have no clue. Every federal agency at this point has taken it upon themselves to cajole every information provider into rigging the system so that only one perspective gets out. This has a massive impact on public opinions. As an example, 4 years ago, I wrote an article that accidentally made it through the censors, and I watch as millions read my piece. Even now, I hear about it at a cocktail party coming from total strangers who don't know that I'm the author. Nothing like this has happened since that magical day. Most of my writing goes into a dark hole, and this is, despite writing daily for the fourth largest newspaper and having access to a huge public forum at the Brownstone Institute. That's a good site, by the way. Check it out, folks. People without such access do not stand a chance. Their posts on Facebook are disappeared an instant they post, while YouTube slams their content as contrary to community standards with no other explanation. And I am a victim of that, too. I know for a fact that YouTube deletes my content, my viewpoints and all that good stuff, including live interviews. I'm like going to do live feeds at rallies and so forth. The certain ones get censored. Oh, yeah, violate community standards. I'm like, prove it to me. But remember, it's at will, right? So, okay, I'll keep on going here. Self-censorship has become the habitual practice of the intellectual class. Otherwise, you only beat your head up against the wall and make yourself a target. Minute by minute, in real time, public opinion is being shaped by this wicked industry, which dramatically distorts political outcomes. As I say, this is surely the most important issue we face. A decision by the Supreme Court to let this go on, seeing no real issue here, will lead straight to our doom and the death of freedom itself. AI, a totalitarian's dream. There is an additional problem that is very serious. These days, there is a massive race to program censorship into the algorithms themselves so that no one is actually doing it, so that there cannot be any real defendants in the case against them. AI will soon be running everything so that Google and Facebook, etc., can simply say that their machine learning is doing the dirty work. Perhaps one of the reasons AI has hit us with such a rush is precisely because of this case before the court. The deep state and his industrial partners are not going to give up easily. Everything depends on their victory over free speech so far as they are concerned. Excuse me here. That's why everyone should hope for a sweeping statement by the Supreme Court that reaffirms the fundamental American commitment to have government completely out of the business and manipulate public opinion through curating what information you can see and read and what you don't want to see and read. It's tragic that such a fundamental human right should so heavily depend on the majority decision of this one body. It's not supposed to work this way. First Amendment is supposed to be the law, but these days, But these days, what the government has built an entire empire around the idea that it simply does not matter. We're with the government. We are smarter than you. The job of the Supreme Court is to remind our overlords that people are not merely putty in the hands of the deep state agents. We have fundamental rights that cannot be abridged. Natural rights, in other words. There is a rally scheduled outside the court on March 18th with many speakers making themselves available to the press. Note the sponsoring organizations. These are the Freedom Fighters in America Today. You're welcome to join us. It won't sway the court, of course, and the crowds will surely be thinner than they otherwise would be given how much success the censorship industry already enjoys. Still, it's worth the shot. Truly, we all should shudder to think of the future of American freedom in absence of a decisive statement by the court on behalf of the basic liberty the framers intend to be protected for everyone. And many of the framers will agree to that. Well, can you? That's how I look at it. And it's very chilling indeed when you see these things. And I'm just like, really dawns on me. You know, some of these clowns out there think they're smarter than you on what you can hear, what content you can see, and all that good stuff. And this is why I tell folks, hey, there's plenty of other sites out there that are more pro-free speech, and including Bastion.com. I am on that, by the way, and I do post my episodes in here, too. To me, it's essential because you got to prepare yourself. I know people, oh, well, I can't get another site. I got everything on Facebook. I'm like, okay, well, have this other stuff for, no, I can't do that. See, remember, so if anything gets wiped out on Facebook, you don't have a backup plan. I can say this: you chose poorly, right? Absolutely. Okay. Well, I'm trying to browse through this one here. One moment. Yeah, we could definitely do this one here. Oh yeah. And this one. This one here, I'm going to be talking about on my next segment, but it's still under free speech on trial. And you know what? I will be right back. So stay tuned. All right, next article I'm going to be read on the same, it just relate to the free speech on trial. Epoch Times. And this one here says, social media companies defend their First Amendment right to censor Americans. First Amendment has been invoked as a refuge to the last resort for discrimination, Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton stated. And it's written by Kevin Stockland. And as it reads here, as the Supreme Court considers the constitutionality of laws in Florida and Texas will regulate social media companies' practice of blocking content, text companies have been standing up for what they claim is their First Amendment right to control speech on their platforms. The case has split free speech advocates into two camps, both of which argue that they are the true defenders of free speech. MetroChoice, an industry group that represents social media companies and the plaintiff in the case, touts that the right of private companies to censor as they see fit, while Texas and Florida officials argue that user social media platforms must not be excluded from service because of their political, religious, or scientific views. After watching the court's hearing of oral arguments on February 26, many legal analysts have concluded that tech companies will likely win the day. The cases are Moody versus NetChoice and NetChoice versus Paxton regarding the Florida and Texas laws, respectively. Speaking on behalf of the social media companies, Steve Del Bianco, founder and CEO of NetChoice, stated after the hearing, "I feel great about how things went. I believe we've created a perfect storm of cases, and Supreme Court will have an opportunity to erect a real wall to signify what the First Amendment is." Mr. Del Bianco told attendees on February 28th Cato Institute conference on the case. The first foundation in that wall in our cases is to say that this wall prevents the government from directly and formally forcing us to carry speech we don't want to carry or to take down speech if we prefer to keep up. Harvard Law Professor Rebecca Tushnet, who specialized in First Amendment cases, concurred, stating, if the states can impose this kind of regulation on platforms, we will know that the past 70 years or so of First Amendment jurisprudence can no longer be relied on in any real way. Free expression or discrimination. But proponents of the state law say they do not restrict social media platforms' ability to speak, but rather their ability to deny service because of customers' viewpoints. The Texas law, HB 20, would also require the platforms that clearly state their terms of service and to explain to customers how they violate those terms in the event they choose to censor them. The First Amendment has been invoked as a refuge or the last resort for discrimination, whether by restaurateurs, hotelers, or those who commercially operate private schools. Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton stated in an incumbent brief in support of the Texas law, but the court has firmly rejected such attempts to enshrine a right to discriminate on at least one occasion, calling the argument patently frivolous. Having achieved market dominance, the platforms have begun to retreat for their neutral assurances, Mr. Paxton stated. For example, X has argued for an absolute First Amendment right to remove anybody from its platform, even if doing so would be discriminatory on the basis of religion or gender or physical disability or mental disability. Florida and Texas passed their anti-discrimination laws in response to allegations that the social media platforms, which carry an enormous amount of public discourse and information sharing, are censoring content that conflicts with progressive narratives. States that passed these laws charge that oligopolies are doing this in an ideological lockstep with one another and at the behest not only of government officials but of the Democratic Party. One or more of the more notorious cases of social media censorship occurred during the 2020 election when Twitter and Facebook blocked reports by New York Post of content on a laptop owned by Hunter Biden, the son of then-candidate Joe Biden. The news was blocked for more than 2 weeks until October 30th, just days before the presidential election. That election was unique in that, due to the COVID-19 pandemic, 60% of the voters voted early or by mail, meaning many of them had already voted by that time. Facebook founder Mark Zuckerberg later admitted that his company blocked the New York Post page at the urging of the FBI.
Oh, I just did for the FBI. When they say bend over, I go, how far, please?
But defenders of social media companies dismissed concerns over social media censorship, suggesting ulterior motives for the state's laws. If you think back to the election of 2020 and the Hunter Biden laptop scandal and the degree to which some social media sites for days or perhaps hours will reduce the amount of sharing of the Hunter Biden story because they wanted to ensure that it wasn't hacked material or terrorist disseminated information. That gave rise to quite a bit of resentment from Trump followers and voters, Mr. DeLibianco said. This was not lost on Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, who has significant political ambitions and believe one way to seize the affections of Trump followers was to quickly punish the big tech companies that had the platform Trump after January 6th, he said. That was a political origin of the Florida law. Wholesale suppression of speech. Despite such assurances, however, some legal experts still have concerns. Philip Homburger, a professor at Columbia Law School, argued in an op-ed on February 25th that allowing social media companies to continue to silence viewpoints they or the government dislike could lead to what he calls wholesale suppression of speech in America. The government used to suppress speech in a retail manner by prosecuting individuals in the courts, which meant the government had to sustain the burdens of proof and persuasion against particular individuals responsible for particular writings, Mr. Hamburger writes. Now, however, government just asked social media platforms to suppress speech, and because they are choke points for much public communication, they offer the government the opportunity for highly effective wholesale suppression. The government no longer needs to prove a case in court in order to silence individual Americans, he wrote. On the contrary, the burden is now on Americans to prove in court that they have been wrongly silenced. So the whole thing, guilty to proven innocent, which is downright nefarious, all right? Never before has suppression been so easy or resisting it so difficult, he stated. Another case currently before the Supreme Court regarding social media censorship, Murthy versus Missouri, stemmed from a lawsuit brought by attorneys general from Missouri and Louisiana, charging that the Biden administration compels social media companies to censor content the government disapproves of, such as posts that contradicted official narratives on COVID-19 origins, vaccines, and treatments. Newspaper or phone company. Legal observers say the net choice cases will likely turn on how the Supreme Court decides that social media companies should be regarded. Faced with the plethora of analogies, the court must decide are the platforms are more like newspapers, printing presses, telephone companies, or telegraph lines. The big issue here is what we analogize.
I'm like, tongue-tied here.
Social media platforms, too. Astos Bhagwat, professor at UC Davis School of Law, told Cato attendees, NetChoice wants to, I think, correctly analogize them to newspapers, and we certainly have the prudent, going back to the 70s, saying newspapers get to decide what to publish. If social media companies are publishers, and Texas and Florida laws would most likely be considered unconstitutional, he said. But if they are common carriers like telephone, like phone companies, for example, then laws requiring them to serve customers equally would likely stand. Certainly, telephone companies don't choose who their customers are, Mr. Bhagwat said. The difficulty is, of course, when you have a wholly new technological, or all analogies are imperfect. Some of the social media companies appear more like chameleons, shifting their colors depending on which shade is most likely to evade oversight. Mr. Del Bianco recounted his testimony before Texas lawmakers in which he asked them, could you enact a law that would force the local newspaper to carry your op-eds? The chairman answered, well, of course not, Mr. DeBianco said. And I said, so what makes you believe you can force Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube to carry content that they don't want to carry? While social media companies argue in these two cases that they are publishers, and they are also quickly to defend Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act, passed in 1996, which protects them from liability for content that appears on their site, specifically because they are not publishers but carriers. The Act states that no provider or user of an interactive computer service shall be treated as a publisher or speaker of any information provided by another information content provider. But tech company proponents say Section 230 is irrelevant to this case. I believe we are able to show that Section 230 really has nothing to do with the First Amendment protections that we're asserting, Mr. Del Bianco said. The dark side of tech revolutions. Proponents of the Texas and Florida laws, however, say that social media companies are common carriers and don't have the right to refuse service to customers based on their religious beliefs or political views. Paxton cites the historical president of telegraph companies that revolutionized communication in the 19th century. This revolution, however, has a dark side, he stated. As the companies that control telegraph lines use their power to manipulate the flow of information, he cited the example of Western Union, which refused to carry messages that compete with this affiliate, the Associated Press. In response, states and later the federal government passed laws to require telegraph operators to transmit speech with impartiality and in good faith, Mr. Paxton stated. And like the telegraph companies of yore, the social media giants of today use their control over the mechanics of this modern public square to direct and often stifle in public discourse. The Fifth Circuit Court agreed with Texas' ruling in September 2022 that the Texas law was constitutional. Net choice and appeal to the Supreme Court, which is expected to deliver a ruling on this case before the summer. Interesting there. This is funny because if the governmental agencies are coercing these social media companies, yeah, that is a big issue for sure. And plus, you got to always look at the everything we have to agree on, the conditions and the rules and all that. I recommend folks to actually download these and put them on your files, and you can look at it thoroughly like a contract. If they violate the contract, hey, you're breaching the contract. That's how I see it. Okay. And it's just very, very obscure, especially when you have the government or government institution trying to intervene, trying to tell them you got to do it this way for your own good. And plus, a lot of these companies are shareholders. Like I say this, if you start buying their shares and get a good amount, you got them by the balls, you can say, and put your 2 cents in. Plus, there's plenty other social media sites out there that are not like, don't have those same attributes. It's time for everyone to explore. I got multiple social media sites myself, so I should never leave everything in one basket. But Bastion's a good site. Yeah, Bastion's a very good site. So because it's more encrypted, and I download the audio and put like a picture, and you can watch it right there. So if they try to censor me in one area, I got that. So it's good to check these sites out. It's very essential to never leave all your social media eggs in one basket. There's folks out there, I hear them complain or go, you know what? Then you know what to do. If not, shut up. I don't like beakers or whiners. I like doers. But it'll be interesting how this case will go. So I'm going to do my final segment in a moment right after this. So stay tuned. All right, I'm going to do one more here. I'm going to call it a night. This one from thegrayzone.com. Secret Cabal, CIA orchestrated Haiti's 2004 coup. This came out March 1st by Jeb Sprague and Kit Clarenberg. As it reads here, a classified diplomatic cabal obtained by the Gray Zone reveals the role of a veteran CIA officer in violently overthrowing Haiti's popular president, Jean Bernard Aristide, in 2004. His spectacular jailbreak in Gonaïves, Haiti, in August 2002 saw a bulldozer smashed through a local prison wall, allowing armed supporters of Amiat Cubain Matier, a gang leader jailed weeks later for harassing Haitian political figures, to overrun the facility. Matier escaped, as did his 158 other prisoners. Among them were perperpetrators of the 9th April 1994 Rabatou massacre, which left dozens of Haitians dead and displaced. The victims were supporters of popular anti-imperial president Jean Bertrand Aristide. Documents released to the Gray Zone under FOIA, no doubt unintentionally, unintentionally revealed that the jailbreak was part of the complex U.S. intelligence operation aimed at undermining Aristide's presidency. At the heart of this operation was Janice L. Elmore, a CIA operative working undercover as a State Department political officer in the Port-au-Prince U.S. Embassy at the time. The breakout set in motion a violent regime change campaign, which ultimately ousted Aristide from office on February 29, 2004. Hey, leap year. Great, right? After being deposed and flown to South Africa, Aristide claimed to have been kidnapped by U.S. forces and directly accused Washington of orchestrating the plot. His nation quickly transformed into a despotic failed state, as ruthless paramilitaries ran roughshod over the population. U.S. Marines and later U.N. troops were deployed to keep the peace, which in practice meant violently cracking down on not only armed anti-coup militants, but also outraged demonstrators and civilians. In 2022, the former French ambassador to Haiti admitted that France and the U.S. did, in fact, orchestrate the coup, which he acknowledged was probably due to Aristide's repeated demands that Haitians be returned the $21 billion in reparations they forcibly paid their former slave masters in Paris since 1825. The former ambassador told the New York Times that with Aristide in exile, it made our job easier to undermine Haitians' demand for a refund. Interesting. This happened around like 1804 or something like that, during that time. And there was even a claim, according to M.S. King. He wrote, he had a couple of booklets. One of them was volume one. It was called the Planet Rothschild, and talked about the ones who, quote, freed the Haitians, unquote, were Jacobins, which is now you could say Jacobins were involved in the French Revolution. And of course, you could say that's part of the influence of communism. All right, the roots of communism. And many of the white people over there were slaughtered, even including the ones that were against slavery. You just killed them all on sight. In my view so far, right, where I read, I think that's why you can see now the Dominican Republic, they had that area split now because they tried to do the same thing over there, and they started shooting cannons at them and kept that border secure for a long time. But I'll continue on here. U.S. officials have completely denied any involvement in Aristide's overthrow, claiming they only intervened afterwards to restore order. But the secret diplomatic cable obtained by the Gray Zone tells a very different story. Dispatched from the U.S. Embassy in Port-au-Prince in September 2002, then by U.S. Ambassador Brian Dean Curran, the file places Elmore, apparently a veteran CIA operative, in a meeting with disloyal local police officers and coup plotters in Gonaives, the night prior to the jailbreak. The file read as confirmation of the high-level U.S. government involvement in the 2004 coup in Haiti and raises profound questions about American involvement in other recent regime change campaigns throughout the hemisphere. Aristide exiled, supporters massacred. In December 1990, a 37-year-old charismatic Catholic priest named Jean-Bernard Aristide was elected by a landslide in Haiti's first ever democratic presidential election, swept into office on a platform of democratization and national sovereignty. Aristide sought to enact a form of liberation theology, a Christian philosophy advocating the freeing and downroading via revolution. But then 7 months after his inauguration, Aristide was marched at gunpoint from Port-au-Prince's presidential palace by members of the Haiti's U.S.-trained armed forces and forced into exile. Over the next 3 years, the country was ruled by a brutal junta, and thousands were butchered by the army, police, and fascist paramilitaries. If I'm correct, gun control is real strict in Haiti, right? This reign of terror reached its zenith on April 22nd, 1994, when military and paramilitary forces attacked the strongly pro-Aristide neighborhood in Rabatou in Gonaives. Hopefully I pronounced that name correctly. Many residents have been participating in a large-scale demonstration demanding a return of their president ever since his removal. In a savage dawn raid, soldiers went house to house, beating and arresting residents, including children, while firing indiscriminately at passerby and those who attempted to flee. When the shooting stopped, at least 30 locals were dead. Rabatou was far from the only massacre carried out by Haiti's military junta during Aristide's exile, but it did produce the very first trial for crimes against humanity in the country's history. In September 2,053 out of 59 defendants were convicted of mass murder for their role in the violence. Among them were the 1991 coup leaders found guilty in absentia. As the New York Times reported at the time, the trial was a landmark for Haiti, a step in bringing justice an elite tier of military and paramilitary officers and their cohorts for human rights abuses committed during the period of violent military rule after the overthrow of the former president. Under mounting public pressure at home and across the Caribbean, Washington committed to returning Aristide's elected government on October 15, 1994, to ensure there's over 20,000 troops. U.S. troops briefly occupied the country alongside a small contingent from CARICOM. The return of the elected government brought an end to the massacres. The Aristide government was finally able to begin reforming the police and disband the country's notorious repressive army while launching school construction projects and other programs benefiting the poor. These projects continued after Aristide's successor, René Préval, won the presidency in 1996. Though Préval disappointed many of the popular movement supporters after appearing to embrace privatization, it seems the country will go back on track when Aristide secured nearly 92% of the votes in a landslide election and was returned to office in 2001. Within months, however, U.S. President George W. Bush imposed crippling sanctions on Haiti, moving to freeze World Bank and IMF loans. Yep. New World Order maggot, George W. Bush, just like his father, another Bushite scumbag, excuse my language, but yeah, that's how I feel, while blocking Port-au-Prince from U.S. aid and development assistance. Washington justified destructive measures by claiming there were irregularities in the election, pointing the finger in the country's opposition to who boycotted the vote. Yet polls show voters strongly supported Aristide and rejected the boycott. It sounds like it's like you're playing projection when you think about it, because there was a claim that George W. Bush didn't even win Florida against Al Gore. There's a big question mark on that. And I have to question it myself. However, Al Gore didn't even win his home state of Tennessee and Arkansas. If he would have won one of those two votes, he would have been president, right? You first one to get 270 electoral college votes, but I digress. Undeterred, Aristide's government quickly set about mobilizing the poor, fostering neighborhood truces, bolstering healthcare education systems, doubling the minimum wage, and holding accountable paramilitaries and their financiers. The president would reestablish diplomatic ties with Cuba, paving the way for the deployment of Cuban medical brigades to Haiti. I guess what he did, those embargoes, right? Though popular among average Haitians, the program were seen as a dire political threat by local opposition figures and their backers in Washington. The Bush administration embraced a development assistance embargo, which successfully pressured most NGOs and other governments to cut off aid. And the National Endowment for Democracy, a U.S. intelligence cutout, established to influence elections abroad, began organizing disunited opposition parties into a single umbrella group under the guise of democracy promotion. Soon enough, a violent paramilitary campaign erupted, targeting government infrastructure in Port-au-Prince, before spreading to rural areas, which strongly supported Lavalas, the movement associated with Aristide. Amid the tumult, the spectacular jailbreak was carried out in Go Neves, in August 2002, and Metayer was freed alongside dozens of paramilitaries and government gangsters. The Smoking Gun. Starkly Stamp recommended denial in full. A previously undisclosed cable was dispatched from the U.S. Embassy in Port-au-Prince to the desk of U.S. Secretary of State Colin Powell on September 18, 2002. It records how a confidant of Aristide, Perry Duverson, had approached the diplomatic mission and complained that the U.S. Embassy vehicle was spotted in Gonaives the night before the jailbreak. According to the cable, the Dominican Republic's ambassador to Haiti noted Aristide himself has raised this issue, pointing to a U.S. official named Janice Elmore as an orchestrator of the instability. And there's the letter right there. Folks can read it for yourselves. Check it out. The camera reveals how immediately prior to the jailbreak, Elmore suddenly informed embassy officials that she had meetings with Cap Haitian and would return by road. The officials cautioned her about traveling to Gonaives and her ban on travel there. In response, she said would merely be transiting the area, adding that she would be accompanied by a police escort. The embassy's deputy chief of mission, Luis Moreno, made no mention of Elmore stopping or conducting any business there, which would be against embassy procedures. The official further urged her to be very careful and exercise good judgment. While Elmore apparently never mentioned her activities in Gonaives, subsequently, Aristide's confidant offered a wealth of sensitive insight. Dovathan claimed Elmore met with law enforcement officials to close to Donnie Taussant, a political figure who had served in the military, headed Haiti's interim police force, and was once Aristide's personal bodyguard. The charismatic and power-hungry Taussant gained a reputation as a political chameleon, as has been documented. He went behind Aristide's back to coordinate with the U.S. Embassy and local power brokers on his own plans to oust the president and assume control of Haiti's popular movement. Hitting a possible friction within the embassy, Ambassador Curran is quoted in the document as assisting. The State Department has designated me as the only person who should talk to Taussant, and only with specific instructions from Washington. In comments on Elmore's meeting in Gonaives, which appears to indicate she was acting off script, Curran wrote, Elmore never mentioned that she had been in Gonaives prior to or after the incident involving Amiot Cubain Mathieu. At the time, American officials under explicit orders not to travel too much of Haiti include Gonaives. After flouting this directive, Elmore had other contacts with questionable individuals in Gonaives, the Dominican ambassador reportedly told the embassy. The questionable individuals, including Hugo Paris, described in the cable as a Haitian with ties to coup plotters. He appeared to have played a behind-the-scenes role in the jailbreak and was one of a number of key wealthy backers of a death squad known as the FLRN, which took over part of the country in the lead up to the February 2004 coup. Years before, Paris was accused of serving as a commercial advisor to Raul Cadres, the head of the brutal military junta that governed Haiti for 3 years following Aristide's overthrow in 1991. Okay. According to the diplomatic cable, I said cabal from the title. Actually, it's the cable. I apologize for that, folks. According to the diplomatic cable, the Dominican ambassadors that Aristide had mentioned Elmore's visit to Gonaives in a discussion, the Haitian president believed Elmore's activities in the seaside city were evidence of a covert plan to undermine his regime. Apparent CIA mobilizes questionable individuals in Haiti. From the tone and language employed by the author of the cable, it is clear U.S. diplomats in Haiti were well aware Elmore might be stirring up trouble, but the document offers little evidence they were interested in ascertaining the exact nature of her activities. Instead, it suggests ambassador and embassy officials were more concerned with determining whether Elmore's cover had been blown and if her phone had been tapped by the Haitian government. According to the document, U.S. diplomats approached a former representative of the private security company, DynCorp. I haven't heard that name in years, to learn more about intercept capabilities of local security services. Their source confirmed Port-au-Prince was capable of monitoring in-country phone calls, and the embassy believed Haitian authorities were specifically targeting Elmore, considering her to be a rich source of information due to her contacts in the police. In this context, Elmore's contact with elements of loyal to Donnie's descent is particularly striking. The cable reveals that the night before the president departed for Taiwan on diplomatic business, someone from the embassy had called Toussaint, warning him that Aristide planned to have him arrested while Aristide was out of the country. According to Aristide's confidant, the unidentified confidant was reportedly set to claim Toussaint, who threatened the civil war if any attempt was made to incarcerate him. Evidently, Elmore was well acquainted with questionable individuals in Haiti who had an interest in Aristide's downfall and were later implicated in the February 2004 coup. That she met with them and their allies the night before the Gonaives jailbreak is close to smoking gun proof of U.S. foreknowledge of that act and a strong indication the foundations of Aristide's forced expulsion were being consciously laid well in advance. A former U.S. embassy staffer in Port-au-Prince, who spoke anonymously with the Gray Zone, described Elmore as stridently anti-Aristide and married to a member of U.S. Special Operations Force. Elmore also appeared to have been well informed about other aspects of the destabilization campaign targeting the Aristide government. And there's a little letter here on that that's been released. Interesting here. According to Department 2001 Department of State email obtained by Gray Zone, Elmore was looped into sensitive discussions about U.S. economic war on Haiti. State Department apparatchiks coordinated with the Inter-American Development Bank official as they sought to counterclaim made by Haiti's government over blocking the delaying of loans and disbursements. Elmore had a front row seat to this, demonstrating her quiet influence over Washington's anti-Aristide's efforts. There's a photo of her right there. Alleged CIA officer. Elmore named as player in CIA cocaine conspiracy. Closer inspection of Elmore's background directly implicates the CIA in the conspiracy In fact, she was specifically identified as a CIA officer by DEA agent during the December 1997 Department of Justice probe into the Reagan administration's caldicine use of cocaine trafficking to covertly finance his dirty war in Nicaragua. In my opinion, Ronald Reagan was only a patsy. DOJ officials reviewed testimony and documents provided by former DEA special agents, agent Solorino Castillo, who attempted to infiltrate organizations controlling El Salvador's cocaine trade. He claimed to have uncovered incontrovertible evidence that the CIA operation to supply Nicaragua's fascist Contras also smuggled drugs to help finance the war, but encountered a wall of resistance trying to alert his counterpart at the CIA and the U.S. Embassy. A superior, he alleged, warned him to leave it alone. Castillo explicitly named Elmore as the CIA operative in El Salvador to whom he reported during his time. She confirmed this timeline when subsequently grilled by the DOJ, but claimed to have merely served as a local embassy narcotics coordinator. She also admitted he briefed on her several occasions concerning drugs in El Salvador and made general allegations that the Contras were involved in narcotics trafficking. However, she asserted no evidence had been developed to substantiate that rumor. Elmore was subsequently interviewed behind closed doors by the House Intelligence Committee about her knowledge of CIA drug trafficking. Her testimony has never been released. At the time, former LAPD narcotics investigator Michael C. Rupert charged that while in El Salvador, she routinely met with military and political leaders and used sexual liaisons to gather intelligence and protect drug operations. Rupert described Elmore as a CIA officer operating undercover as a State Department embassy political officer. Elmore's LinkedIn profile indicates that in addition to her work as a political officer, she was employed by the aviation and police development programs of the state's Bureau of International Narcotics and Law Enforcement Affairs. A State Department newsletter from April 1986 shows Elmore was named in a U.S. Foreign Service nomination. Between 1993 and 1994, she attended to the Inter-American Defense College, or IADC, in Washington, D.C., which has ties to the Organization of American States, or OAS. like other U.S. programs that train police and Army officers from across the Midwestern Hemisphere, the school has a history of grooming individuals involved in coups, death squads, and U.S.-sponsored intelligence programs. Yep, little site here, SOL Worldwide LLC, which has been removed. Since retiring in 2006, Elmore's LinkedIn profile shows she has worked as a consultant as well as direct research and analysis at Seoul Worldwide. The firm's now defunct website explained that its personnel have worked around the world supporting U.S. initiatives. This included Afghanistan National Police, local National Interpreter and Translator Program, and the Bosnian Federal Ministry of the Interior, or FMOI, Curriculum Development and English Training. The website also describes SOL Worldwide carrying out flexible operational readiness and support for projects ranging from construction and security to logistics, transportation, and life support. Given examples of operations in Dubai, the U.S.-Mexican border, El Salvador, Haiti, Sudan, Turkey, and southern Afghanistan, the website further explains various trainings and support services were offered for multinational corporations supporting operations in Africa, Latin America, and Southwest Asia. In the wake of coup, mass graves, mass murders, zero accountability, on January 1st, 2004, the bicentennial celebration of Haiti's independence was held in Gonaïves, where the country's independence from France had been declared in 1804. The gathering was attended by Aristide and notable guests such as South Africa President Thabo Mbeki, the only foreign head of state to resist the French and U.S.-led boycott to the event. While large crowds celebrated, the police clashed violently with local pushists attempting to wreck the bicentennial gathering. Brian Concannon, executive director of the Institute for Justice and Democracy in Haiti, was present in Gonaïves that day. He told the Gray Zone the outbreak of violence was all part of a plan painstakingly constructed for years. The prison break and the violence on January 1st were all deliberate steps toward the eventual coup. Concannon explained, the skirmishes weakened the government, scared its supporters, and emboldened the opposition. The police were already stretched thin, trying to protect the border against the paramilitary invaders, managing the deliberately provocative protests, which were synchronized. The next step was to stir unrest in Gonaïves, which opened up a third front for the police and forced them to divert resources. Interesting there. It's a little interesting. So I'm almost done here. By mid-February 2004, initial skirmishes between fascist paramilitaries and local authorities had descended into all-out war. Pushes in Gonaïves teamed up with an anti-Aristide ex-police paramilitary figures who descended on the country from the Dominican Republic, where they had been protected for years. The legitimate government deposed. The U.S. and allies installed a new prime minister, Gonaïves-born Gerard Latour, a former World Bank official living in Boca Raton, Florida at the time. Oh my goodness. Is this going insane or what? These banksters and man, good grief. Of course, Boca Raton. It means mouth of a rat in Spanish. Meanwhile, paramilitaries reigned supreme in the streets of Haiti, murdering and imprisoning anti-coup protesters with impunity. A study published by Lancet Medical Journal found that approximately 8,000 people were murdered in the greater Port-au-Prince area in 22 months following the coup. A University of Miami human rights investigation documented mass murder by police and UN occupation forces, as well as mass graves, cramped prisons, hospitals with no medicine, corpse-strewn streets and maggot-infested morgues. Haiti's public administrators, judiciary, and security forces were subsequently purged of any and all officials still loyal to democracy. Mass layoffs and attacks on anti-coup labor unions were commonplace. Dissident journalists faced assassination and arrest, while the government's El Union newspaper and Aristide Foundation for Democracy Creole language newspaper, the Dayite, were forcibly shuttered. Meanwhile, those responsible for the Rabbit 2 massacre and other parliamentary crimes were shielded from prosecution. A request for comment by the Greystone on the Facebook account of Janice Elmore and email address displayed on SOL's worldwide now-defunct website have gone unanswered. Elmore is not available at the phone number listed there. The State Department refused our request for comment, referring us instead to the CIA, which has not responded to an email inquiry. All the world's a stage, right? My goodness. Insane, folks. Happens lots of places, and even Haiti's been a lot of controversy in that area too. So it's just disturbing, very disturbing. You know, all these factions trying to run the world, trying to run those little places like Haiti, take advantage of folks that are considered disarmament zones. This is why I don't tell people you never trust the government. And I'm against imperialism by any means. Good book to read, folks, by Chalmers Johnson, Blowback, how CIA interfered and backfired, blowback in their faces, including the hostage crisis, because it started with 1953 CIA coup, Operation Ajax. But, hey, interesting indeed. And the Greys, like I said, you know, they want a revolution like the Invincible. No. I don't trust these bastards, government. But doesn't mean all their information is bad either, Gray Zone. So I always give them props. They do their best to go really deep in there. And that's pretty damn cool. All right. That'll be it. I'll thank everyone for listening. Plus, feel free to download and share throughout your social media networks. If you have any questions, comments, recommendations, all that good stuff, go to ll3.podcast@proton.me. I'm going to leave all the footnotes of the articles on this episode. If you want to donate, go to paypal.me or cash.app/LokiLook3. If you want to support the Gray Zone, Epoch Times, and Daily Reckoning, that'd be cool. Give them all the love. Tell them LokiLook3 sent you, all right? Once again, thank you for your time. Please always remember that the demoniac resistance is healthy for the soul and can liberate humanity. Until next time, take care of yourselves. Keep on spreading the love. And may your guardian spirits be with you.